This is Lori Phillips. I'm here interviewing Mr. Bobby Dean Payton on April 24th, 1995 in Kodiak, Alaska. Mr. Payton is here to visit his daughter, me, all the way from Fairland, Oklahoma. He used to live in Alaska for a period that spanned over 6 years, but they were not consecutive years. He did 2 tours of duty here, and I'm going to let him tell you about his experiences.
Well, I'm Bobby D. Payton. I came to Alaska the first time in 1962. We drove up the Alaskan, or the Alcan Highway, in a 61 Plymouth. I had 3 young daughters and my wife, Shirley. And as we arrived into Alaska, I was assigned to Fort Richardson, Alaska, to the 23rd Infantry. And my job was a supply sergeant, which primarily what it does is it supplies the company with all its needs to see that they get them on time and where they need to be. And then I was here about a year in 1963, and we had our 4th daughter, who was born in Anchorage, Alaska, and her name was Terry. And we loved her very much, and about that time, we moved on to the post to Fort Richardson. And then along come 1964 on Good Friday, when the worst thing that could ever happen to me, or disaster that I'd ever seen, was when we had the earthquake. I was downstairs, and I had 2 daughters that was upstairs. And when it started, I thought, I didn't really know what was happening. Then it dawned on me that, hey, this is an earthquake. So I went up the stairs and got 1 daughter under each arm and started down the stairs, and I was bouncing from one side of the wall to the rail. And as I looked out the window when I came down, the ground was waving just like it does on a sea. It was just rippling, tearing, screeching. And consequently, all the telephones were out, the electricity was off, all gas lines had to be turned off. And I was just getting ready to go that morning to go on a caribou hunt. So I had a 3/4 ton that was loaded down with provisions of sleeping bags and tents and stoves and some mess equipment, because I was going to be gone for several days. Well, I knew immediately that I had to get to my company, that I was probably needed there. And when I arrived in my company, I was the first non-commissioned officer to arrive in the company. And so we immediately started clearing the buildings, getting everybody out, because we didn't know what state we was in. The buildings were cracked. Fort Richardson wasn't hit quite as hard as the town of Anchorage, but it was hit hard. I put up a tent, and I put it up originally for just to get the people out of the cold, because some of them was running around in shorts, and they didn't have the proper clothing on. And we put the tent up and put a generator going and got Herman Nelson heaters going. But then instead of using it for that, then they started using it for a hospital. So I'm glad it come to some good use. I stayed up into Alaska till 1965, at which time I left and went to Virginia. Then I spent a tour in Vietnam, and then came back, and then I spent another tour at Fort Greely, Alaska, and I was assigned to the Arctic Test Center. And our mission there was, I was in logistics, and my job was to support, to see that we had the right supplies at the right time at the right place. It was just a small unit. We tested everything from beans to parachutes. I think Alaska is a great country. I loved every moment of it. I was wanting to retire in the state of Alaska, but it didn't work out that way. But I'm back here now. I was at Fort Greely from 68 to 71, and this is my first time to be back to Alaska since that time. It's a great country.
Well, Mr. Payton, Dad, why don't you tell me a little bit more about what you saw in Anchorage when you went in there, and some of the experiences that you encountered, or you had. In 1964, during the earthquake.
Well, the buildings, three-story buildings, would you'd look at across, and there'd only be one story. They'd drop completely into the ground. Well, the roads, there was no roads in or out. We were isolated.
How are the people reacting in Anchorage? I mean, was there a lot of confusion? Was there looting going on?
No, I really can't say there was a lot of looting, because, you know, one thing, there were guards posted on every block, trying to keep everything as it was. When I first come to this state, you didn't have to lock your doors. If you had trouble, somebody was going to stop and assist you. That's just the way the people were. People didn't drive by you and leave you unassisted, and that's the way we were doing with Anchorage. I think the people were very calm under the circumstances, what they went through. I know several times after, we had a lot of tremors afterwards, and boy, when that thing would go to trembling, tremors would come. I mean, we'd skedaddle out of that building in a hurry. We got out of that thing pretty mighty fast. But no, I can't say the people were very calm, and everybody pulled together. But later, in my last tour of duty of Alaska, it had changed a lot. We started beginning to get a lot of hippies up here, and they moved in, and they had no regards for anyone's property or anything else. They just used it and didn't replenish it. If we would be out on a trail or hunting trip, an emergency arose, we went into the cabin, dried out, got warm, but when we left, we either left a note or replenished anything that we took. You didn't have to lock doors back in the early days, but after the late 60s and early 70s, you had to, if it wasn't nailed down, it got stolen.
Well, back to the earthquake, how quickly did you see that repairs were being made? Was it back to the same old business in a short period of time? Or you left in 1965, so you had a little bit of time there, I think, to maybe see some of the repairs that was going on. And was the Army involved in any of the repairs?
Oh, I don't think the Army was involved directly in the repairs, but I think immediately after the earthquake, rebuilding started. It's just a way of life. If a tragedy happens, the quicker you can get to work and get it done, better off you are. You can't dwell on something that happens in your life bad. The quicker that you can get back to work, and I think that's the way it was then. I think the minute that the last tremor shuddled, the people of Alaska started rebuilding.
Backing up a little bit in time, you mentioned that you came up the Alcan with all of us. What were the roads like, and anything interesting happen along the way?
Oh, we had lots of interesting things. There wasn't very much paved roads, although we came up in the period of time of February, which really is the better time, because the roads are still frozen enough. that it's smooth. But I've went down the highway at other times and periods, like in, say June, and when the thaw comes, and there's chug holes, dust. When I came up the Alcan the first time, we didn't pass a filling station. If it was only 50 miles or 100 miles, when we come to a filling station, we stopped and filled up. We had been told what to bring with us, and we were prepared for the road. We didn't have anything drastically happen coming up in 1962, but one time when we were leaving here in 1971, we were going down and we got to Destruction Bay. And before we got there, we ran off the highway, my wife did, and I accused her of going to sleep. I was a dozing over at the other side. So I got on the wheel and I thought, well, I'll drive. Well, I didn't go a half a mile and I run off the road too. But the one time we run off the road, we covered our vehicle completely up with snow. It was submerged. We were underneath the snow. I had to crawl out the window, and a state truck passed us and didn't see us, and there was an oil truck that came by, and I got up on the road, and he stopped, and he put his cable on. I didn't think he could pull us out, but he did. And it took us about an hour to get all the snow unpacked from underneath the motor, and we got back in the car, and the first place I come to, we spent the night. And where did that happen to be? It happened to be at Destruction Bay. And we had another disaster that night. I got up the next morning, we were going to get on our way. I went out to start my vehicle, and it just grunted. The plug and the hitching post didn't work, and the temperatures had dropped to probably about 50 below zero. So we were almost a day inside of a garage with a heater trying to thaw our car out. But once we got it thawed out, we didn't have much more else to happen, you know, just drastically. But that could have, when we went off the highway that day and covered up, there was a lot of things going through my mind. You know, will anybody see us? Thank God there was.
Now, your second tour was at Fort Greely, Alaska, and you came up in 1968, I want to say. What was your job description, or what was it that you were assigned to do while at Fort Greely?
I was a logistics NCO, which S4, which, in again, is supplying our unit with clothing, materials that it needs to function. That covers a latitude of things, you know, logistics does.
I recall that you had some experience in doing some Arctic training. Can you tell about that?
Oh, everybody, we were little teams of people. We would be normally an officer and one senior NCO, and then they would be a group of soldiers that was sent TDY from the lower 48s up here to assist us in these tests. And like I said, we tested everything from beans to parachutes. In a certain amount of it had to be done at a certain percentage. You could test it at any time, day or night. Other part of it, it had to be tested at a certain degree. We'll say 5% of the test, it had to be 40 below zero. And maybe 1 or 2% of the test, it had to be 50 or 60 below. Well, when them times come, we were called upon to go. It didn't make any difference what time, day or night. We was called out the ranges to continue this test. And it was all classified. We'd be given our instructions of what to do when it was time to do it. And then we carried it out. I also had another disaster to fall upon me one time. I was up on an alley highway, and I was with two colonels and myself, and we were just really out snowmobiling. We didn't even have a rifle with us. We were just up there just having a good time. And the weather changed on us, and it went from probably when we were up there, it was probably 10 below, and the weather warmed up to probably 35 degrees. Well, when that happens, water goes to running on top of the ice, and we were planning on going down this river, and when the water started running on the river, we couldn't run on the river because it was too soft. So we had to find another trail, and the trail was so bad that we finally ran out of fuel. I had an extra gallon of gasoline, and one other snowmobile had an extra gallon of gasoline. But the one colonel that was just new up there, he just had what fuel was in his tank. Well, he was the first one to run out of fuel. So I gave him my snowmobile, and we left his. And we rode double till my snowmobile ran out. It was a larger one. And we rode and walked, and when the last snowmobile went out, we left them, tried to leave them on top of a hill. And the last, we was in there about 3 days, and I finally had to walk out to get help, because I seen we wasn't going to get out. So I walked out and got another vehicle and went back in and rescued the other two people. It was Colonel Rhodes, who is later in life went up to the University of Alaska and was a professor up there. I used to talk to him on Christmas, but I have lost contact with him. So what I think has happened is he's probably retired. I hope the latter is not. He's passed on, but he was a great person, a great commander, and I respected him very highly.
Where were the two colonels when you walked out? I mean, what did you have to do for survival in that kind of weather conditions?
Well, in my snowmobile, I had emergency rations, and naturally we had matches. I left them pretty well dug in, and I had a sleeping bag in my snowmobile. We didn't leave it with a snowmobile. We carried them with them. They stayed in sleeping bags, and we got up enough wood and built a fire, and I walked out.
Sounds cold. I recall back when I was very young that you did a lot of camping up on like Mount McKinley or something like that, and I recall something happened on one of your expeditions up there. I don't recall all the details about it, so maybe would you talk about something pretty drastic I think happened. The weather changed or something, and y'all got stranded up there. Could you tell about that?
Well, it's just a thing. You don't panic. When we run into a blizzard, so the only thing to do was to dig into the snow. And if possible, two people get into one sleeping bag to create as much heat as possible, and then try to wait the storm out. This is when you're, I was assigned to an infantry company, and this was our yearly training. We'd go up on the glaciers, climb the glaciers. I really never thought I was in any danger. You know, I look back now and see, hey, I could have frozen easily. But when you have your confidence in yourself, don't panic. You can survive.
Did you get frostbite?
No, I was dressed properly. You want to keep moving and have the right clothing. Don't never go unprepared. Even though you think you're just going to be gone 5 minutes, you don't get separated from your rucksack. And what's in that rucksack is your survival gear. And when I say survival gear, that depends on the train you're going into. If you're well equipped, you can survive the harsh weather.
Well, I must be thinking of another trip that you went on. You went on another trip. Maybe this was during your first tour that you were going across a glacier or something. You had to do some glacier training. Would you tell us about that experience and what occurred?
Every year, every infantry company, that was our sole mission up here in the 23rd Infantry Battle Group, was we were to detain the enemy in case Russia decided to cross. So for us to be prepared, each year we had to train to climb the glaciers. And that's generally where the battle would be fought. And this 1 week, it was our time to go for the glacier cleaning. And our civilian advisor advised the CO that the weather was changing and he didn't recommend us making the crossing. Well, this crossing wasn't probably over a quarter of a mile, at the most a half a mile. But as it turned out, we had over 100 mile an hour winds and temperatures of 40 below zero. And with 100 mile an hour wind, that makes it almost unbelievable to cross. It'll suck the body heat right out of your body, any little crack. And he wanted, our commander said, we're going to try to, if he could get across this opening and to the next one, the winds might not even be there. You know, so 40 below zero ain't too bad. But with 100 mile an hour wind, you can't survive. We pushed on, and consequently, we had two casualties, which didn't have to happen. Finally, the word was given to dig in, and when we dug in and got out of the winds and got into sleeping bags, the rest of the company survived. But there was a lot of frostbite. I myself did not receive very many frosts. I was close to being frostbitten, but it wasn't serious enough. But many of the men in the company did get frostbites, and we had two casualties that had died.
Well, thank you for sharing with me and with any other people that are interested in history. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, I would like to have came back here and retired, but it didn't happen. I love the state of Alaska, and again, I'm getting up in years and ages now. What I like about the state, I love to hunt, I love to fish, and I love the people. And when all that environment's together, I could have lived on a mountain or a valley for the rest of my life. And if I was younger, and I would say for all young people, it's a beautiful state. But to preserve it, we have to respect it. We cannot use our resources if we don't replenish them. Don't ravish it. And it'll be there for the next generation and the generations after. If we will take it and preserve it, it will be here for others to enjoy.
Thanks, Dan. Well, that concludes this interview about Mr. Bobby Payton's experiences in Alaska from in the 60s and early 60s and later 60s and early 70s. Thank you.